Stuttgart, das Tor ist leer. Alles oder nichts. Das komplette Fleisch ist aus dem Grill, auf dem Grill die Ecke kommt. Und er ist drin! Und er ist drin! Der absolute Wahnsinn! Der VfB Stuttgart bleibt in der ersten Fußball-Bundesliga. Schiebt sich vor.
Welcome to Valve-based Stuttgart Americana, an American-based English-language Valve-based Stuttgart fan podcast where reviews are unofficial, uninformed, usually unprepared. This is episode 120. I'm one of your hosts, Travis. You can reach me at Hazelfish. You can reach us on our Twitter machine at Valve-Americana, our website, valveamericana.weebly.com. I am not alone anymore after last week's solo go. Matt is back after a month off. This is episode 71, Matt, and what everybody is talking about is which one of our Felixes is our favorite? Is it Felix Zweier, who officiated the match this weekend? Or is it our old friend, Felix Brick, the doctor?
If I didn't have a good friend named Felix Cabo, who is my Dortmund buddy, who I referred to on the podcast every now and then, we'd be firmly in Never Trust a Felix territory. Dr. Cabo is single-handedly keeping the name Felix out of the gutter of this podcast, which I'm sure is something he is very, very proud of.
Yeah, it's not a great day for any Felixes out there at all. You guys, I can't wait for them to tag team a match for us at some point. Oh,
one of them will be on VAR duty, and the two of them will just sit there giggling about screwing us every turn.
Part one shout outs. Valve Bingo. I didn't watch, so no clue. Sorry, ESPN Plus, if you got this one. Pod predictions, though, I won again at 5-4. So now I'm only 3 behind Austin, 5 behind Matt, while Jeff is only 11 up on you, Matt. So with 3 weeks left, you still got a shot at this. OFC Fantasy, Lukas Stock conceded last week in a shocking move, but then he beat Village Footy by 12 points this week. So I don't know what's going on with those two. Give Village Footy a listen. They may be winning. They may not be winning. I'm not sure. OFC Tip Spiel, Kai won again and is now only 11 points behind Stefan. I beat David, though, so that's good for me. I'm up by 3 points in our relegation fight to stay, I don't know, in the OFC, I suppose. Matt, I want to get your thoughts on this one. So the Valby Frauen, they played Hegau, and while it was 1-1 for a while and kind of close, they ended up winning 4-1. Meanwhile, SC Sen won versus relegation threatened Niefern 2-0. So next week, we host fifth place Freiburg. While Sen, they're lucky. They've got another relegation threatened team. There's only 2 points to separate them. On the other side of it, the Valby Stuttgart 2, the under 21 team, they drew versus the Kickers. So the way this works is that the points stay the same. The Kickers are 4 points up on Stuttgart. Hoffenheim is 2 points up on Stuttgart. So there's still a lot to play for here. Of those two, with about 3-4 matches left, if one of them could get promoted to the third league, which one are you picking, the Frauen or the Valpe 2?
Well, in an ideal world, they're both going up. And we've talked about the advantages of having VfB 2 up. But I'm going to go with the Frauen here because it's feeling like women's sports globally are kind of having a moment right now. And it would be amazing for the Frauen to take advantage of that. And maybe we could get a game on streaming and watch these ladies just pour goals in against their opponents. But they've got a tough road to go with the better teams than Sand does, as you mentioned. But I believe in them. I believe they will continue to score early and often. And I will take great delight in retweeting all of the Twitter posts.
I'm surprised the shop isn't selling any of the ladies' gear, unless they are worried that more people would buy the kit with the Alliance logo as opposed to the Winamax logo. I'm wondering if that's a move they'll make next year, because talking to the shop, what do we got at the shop this week? We got some basic gray t-shirts with Stuttgart or the Stuttgart emblem on them. And I guess that's kind of important because we got some former and future Val Bayers who played this week. So Gil was on the bench in the Polish league. Juan Pereira played 80 minutes against St. Pauli, who looks to be getting promoted. Omar Baez played 60 minutes in a loss in Turkey. Mo played 11 minutes in a loss in the Netherlands. Castanares, though, played 60 minutes and win for Ulm, and it looks like they're on track for promotion to the from the third league, which is awesome. Luca, oh, poor Luca, played the entire match for now officially relegated Darmstadt. Jovan Milosevic played 30 minutes, another win in the Swiss league. Future Val Bayers, Yannick Keitel played the entire match for Freiburg in their loss to Wolfsburg, and Nick Voldemod played almost 90 minutes for Bremen in their win and had almost, yet again, no stats at all. So of all those names I just dropped, which one doesn't make your eyes glaze over at all?
Voldemod right now, and probably recency bias because we just saw him, and he did impress, even though he didn't put up any numbers. But the guy plays hard. He runs hard. He is smart positionally. Maybe he just needs some more help getting to better finishing positions. So I'm excited to see him playing for us soon.
Yeah, 6'5" guy with the skills of midfielder is kind of fun. I want to just briefly mention Luca Pfeiffer. Poor guy had a really rough season for Darmstadt. I think a lot of us thought that he was going back to where he kind of made his magic and maybe he'd have a good season. I think he only had 2-3 goals on the season, 2-3 assists, just kind of invisible there. So I'm hoping that Darmstadt hangs on to him and maybe he can refine that magic in the second division, because yikes, it was rough for him. Speaking of rough, Matt, I am having in the what are you drinking thing, I'm having a Great Lakes, which is a local brewery here in Cleveland, Imperial Amber Lager aged in bourbon barrels, 12.1%. Oh my. What about you, Matt? What is going to get you through this episode?
I am sincerely hoping that our buddy Derek Ray is going to be calling our game next week. We're playing Bayern, feels like one that ESPN would assign him to. So in honor of Derek, I'm having a single malt scotch, the Balvenie, tonight because I'm feeling fancy.
Oh, boy, Derek, this one's for you, buddy. Sorry about that. The man of the match. Now, I did listen to most of the match as I was rekindling my glorious middle school track coaching career, but I wasn't able to watch much of it. So I forgot to send out the OFC notice about man of the match or any questions or anything like that. So I'm on top of things. Who was your man of the match? Because my man of the match might surprise you.
So I'm going to go with Alex Neubel, because while you weren't watching and did not see, he had multiple hero saves throughout this game. A couple different opportunities where he gave up big juicy rebounds that made me a little cringy. But then he was back up on top of it to either pressure the shooter or make the second save. You got an honorable mention for Jamie Leveling. He was creating opportunities all over the place and just had probably his best game with Stuttgart.
Oh, wow. I'm going to go with Dan Axel Zagadou, because I saw his tweet after the match about what a effing disgrace this game was. So I love it when players break out of the shell a little bit and say what we're all thinking. So let's see what Dan Axel was talking about. Let's get into part 2, the match itself. All right, so we got first place hosting third place. Dennis Undav got a lot of stick for saying earlier in the season that these were the two best teams in Germany. And even though there is Bayern in between these two teams, I think most people say that these are two of the most fun teams to watch. And to be sure, they did not disappoint on Saturday here. I was not very optimistic. I just figured Bayern would do what they do. They would get a late goal. I thought it would be close, but all they do is win. And I was sort of wrong, but I was also sort of right in this one. The thing I want to ask you first, because I wasn't able to watch a ton of it, is we were all worried that Angelo Stiller wasn't going to be in the match. That was the big missing piece. How much did Stuttgart miss him in this particular day?
I was a little concerned when I saw the lineup. As you said, we knew Stiller was going to be out, but still was a little worried about it. The change to going to a 3-4-2-1 was really interesting. I think it negated the need for Stiller. It made me feel like we can get by without him. Enzo Mio kind of filled in his spot and played really, really well. That's something, you know, starting the season, we wondered if Mio could fill in for Enzo. Mm-hmm. And he had one or two games there at the beginning of the year, played really well. He might be a better kind of all-purpose sort of shading defensive midfielder than he is an attacking midfielder.
I seem to like him a lot more in the middle than I do on the wing. It just seems he allows him to be creative, and he does have some scrap in him. He's a lot tougher than I think we think he is, just because of his size and because of all that stuff. I love the flexibility, though, is what you're saying, is that we can miss a guy. It was Anton at one point. It was Stiller at one point. It was Seiru for some points. And this team can still respond and still play really, really well. But let's get to the elephant in the room that everybody was talking about. So breaking down the match, we're just going to go right to the end of it. So let's talk about our buddy Felix Zweier. There was the issue with the added time. The thing that got me about this, because I did actually watch this, probably the last 3-4 minutes of this, everybody complained, from the players to the coaches to the guys who weren't actually playing at all. I want to bring up one of the things that Sebastian Hoeneß said after the match, when they asked him about, you know, the refereeing and all that. He went on to say that, in my opinion, conceding the second goal is very, very bitter for us. In my opinion, the goal shouldn't have been scored, firstly, because we didn't defend it well. Okay. And secondly, because the referee penalized us, in my opinion. The ball goes to the arm, and for me, the arm is not attached to the body. For me, it's a situation where the player wants to head the ball, realizes he's not going to hit it with his head, and it puts his hand in a bit. The minimum for me is that the goal is simply looked at by the referee who was on the pitch. He has a perception, and yet it's hectic, and I expect the goal to be looked at because there's so much at stake for us. About the stoppage time, he said, there was no reason for me to let the game go on so long, in my opinion. At first, it was said that only 3 minutes could be played. Then the logical consequence for me is that maybe it would be 4, but instead it was 5. And I don't understand that. Thanks to Manu, by the way, who sent us the translation on that. If you don't know who Manu is, give him a check on YouTube. He does a great job with his own show, and you can translate it with the YouTube machine. So my thing was that everybody was complaining about this. Like I said, my usual take is, like, if the players don't complain, okay. If the coach doesn't complain, okay. But when everybody, and I made a joke about this, when my neighbor who's watching, who doesn't know anything about soccer, is complaining, I'm like, something's up with this. So I don't know. You saw the whole match in its entirety. How did Felix do overall? And what were your thoughts on that last 5-6 minutes of the game?
The field felt, throughout the whole game, felt like it was tilted against us a little bit. We were playing really well. I thought we were, for long stretches, the better team. Leverkusen, especially in the last, I don't know, 20 minutes, was really pouring the pressure on. And their first goal, we just did not defend well, period. Their offside goal that they got at the 77th minute, that was super offside. That would have been offside even by my rule that I've been shouting about. So not much to take away from there. But the final goal, before we even get to the clock discussion or anything, I watched a replay just maybe 20 minutes ago of that goal, and it's cross in from the corner, handball, handball, shot, handball in the net. So 3 different opportunities of clear. One of those, you could argue the guy's arm was in against his body and it was a natural, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But man, that's excessive. And there were a couple different opportunities in the game where you just had to start questioning, like, what color his underpants was this guy wearing? Like, did he take a bunch of aspirin before the game? Like, Leverkusen's good, and they're going to make a team like Stuttgart and anybody else take more penalties because they just put you in a situation where you have to do that. Mm-hmm. And their offensive style and their skill level just does that to you. At the same time, Stuttgart's really good too, mm-hmm. and can play that same game. And there is no reason for a 2-1 penalty difference in this. I don't know. I wish I had some concrete examples, but that would require me to sit back down and watch this again. And I don't have the constitution to do that for another 97 minutes.
Oh my God. The thing, I was way more salty about this than I anticipated being upset about this. I couldn't let it go. I don't think there's a conspiracy at all. I do think it's really interesting that the DFL, the referee organization, came out and said every decision was the right decision. I'm like, come on. I watched the Cologne match today against where they played against Mainz, and there was what looked like a clear handball in added time, and they didn't call that. I'm just like, what is the rule? So I don't think there's a conspiracy for Leverkusen. I just think this guy's not very good. And when I say he's not very good, and everybody was upset, even Kicker gave him a rating of 5.5, saying, quote, he was grossly incorrect in the assessment of tackles and personal penalties. His own behavior caused a hectic atmosphere, end quote. The foul thing you mentioned, it was 19-10, 19 fouls against Stuttgart, only 10 for Leverkusen. But what do I know? This guy got promoted to referee during the European Championship. So obviously somebody thinks he's pretty good. It's just, to me, I didn't have a problem with the foul that Stenzel had to set up that final free kick. I thought that was probably the easiest one. I know some people were upset about that. To me, it was just, I agree with Honus. It's like, what is added time? How much time are you going to give anybody here? And I don't know. I don't think Leverkusen, there's a conspiracy that they go undefeated, as much as I think this guy's just not impressive. And maybe he's really good, but he had a bad, according to everybody, a rough day on Saturday.
He definitely had a rough day. And I didn't feel like he wasn't calling things against Leverkusen. I felt like he was calling 50-50 questionable stuff against Stuttgart that didn't need to be called. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's some sort of unconscious bias going on with this dude. But the thing that bothers me the most of all of it is not the penalty against Stenzel. That was the right call. It's not the added time. That's a subjective thing. We could argue about that all day. The goal was controversial. We have VAR.
Right.
Why was it not looked at? Just take a look. If he takes a look and goes, there isn't enough evidence to overturn the decision on the field, I'll be mad, but at least you took a look. They didn't even, it was like, okay, nope, we're done here. See ya.
Yeah.
And that fuels this. I'm with you. I don't think there's a conspiracy theory either, but the people who want to see one, the fact that they didn't even look at it, that adds a lot of fuel to those folks.
I didn't even think the potential handball calls were that egregious, to be honest. To me, it was when Victor Boniface pushed Anthony Rouault so that Anthony couldn't get the head on the ball, and that helps the ball get in the box. To me, you watch that one. That's one of the things that Daxo put on his Instagram page. It's like, how do you not call that a penalty of some kind? And so, I don't know. Maybe he was just caught up in the moment. Maybe he was just caught up in whatever. But congratulations to him, because now there's a new Felix in town. So, Dr. Brick, you can take a seat in this one. So, I don't know. It's hard to dive into the match at this point. I looked up some of the stats, and it looked like, based on that momentum chart that FAMOB has, that Stuttgart was, for large portions of this game, outside that 20-minute period you were mentioning, just dominating this thing. The XG was in Stuttgart's favor for this one. Let's chat that up real quick before we dive into it. From a stat perspective, it looked like Stuttgart was in control of this. And I heard a lot of moaning about, man, if we would have just committed or converted one more chance, if Seyru would have gotten ahead on this one, this game's over.
Yeah, there was a lot of back and forth. We definitely controlled play for stretches. The 13th minute, Girassi barely missed a header. 58th minute, Leveling had a great ball over to him in the middle of the box that he sent just wide of the net. 86th minute, Wuyong Zhang gave him a ball that he was kind of handcuffed on, but managed to get towards the net, and just Hradecki made an amazing save. So mm-hmm. Seyru just was a little snake bit, but if he buries any of those, or Furich in the 72nd minute had a really good shot from a tight angle that went just wide of careening off the post and into the net. We had chances and it just couldn't quite put them in. And my biggest takeaway from this game is this is probably, Bayer Leverkusen is probably the best team in Europe right now. Mm-hmm. And we had them beat.
Yeah, we've got two draws against them in the league, and we lost late to them in the Pokal. So, I mean, that adds up. I read somebody, what was it? Somebody put on there that, I just had a brain fart. Eh, never mind. I didn't read it at all. Yeah, so, yeah, I know. This Imperial Amber is working its magic right here. The other thing is, you already talked about Alex. Kicker had Anton as the highest rated player in this one at a 1.5 versus Seiru, who was the worst rated player at a 4, which we haven't seen that a lot. So, you know, how did Anton in the defense in general play? You already talked about Alex, but Anton must have played fantastic because he and Chris were named player of the match by Kicker.
So Kicker and FopMob have a very different set of opinions. Jirasi grades out very well. Anton, Sturgio, and Ito all grade out fine. I thought the defense was good. They were mostly non-entities. This was a game played a lot in the midfield. So they didn't see a ton from the defense. There were not big mistakes. Ito had a couple balls that he cheated up on and then made a big move to get back to in record time, which seems to be kind of his thing. Sturgio was solid. I had no complaints or concerns about him playing back there, which was really great to see. And Anton was classic Anton. The one thing that we really kind of screwed up on was that first Leverkusen goal was just a defensive brain fart. We left a guy unmarked. The person who was supposed to have him left him because they thought something else was going to happen, and we paid for it. But overall, a really solid defensive performance against one of the best offensive teams in all of Europe.
You're speaking about best offensive teams. This came out that with the goals that were scored in this one, we have a new magic triangle, right? So the magic triangle referred to Bobic, Elber, and Balakov back in 96, 97, who scored, I believe, 49 goals. But now Chris, Dennis, and Seiru have 51 goals. I mean, is it time to come up with a new shape, like Ted said earlier? Is the new magic triangle? I mean, I do remember what I was going to say, that one of our biggest problems this year is that we haven't converted all the opportunities that we've had to kind of separate ourselves. Yeah. But on the flip side, we've converted so many opportunities and we're in third place right now. And it was kind of a tongue in cheek, like, what a crazy season is it to where you're like, ah, man, if we could only score a few more goals, we'd have a better season. But we're scoring more goals than I think we've scored in quite a long time.
Well, think about like last year when our constant gripe was we're getting into really good positions and we can't put the ball in the net. Now we're getting into really good positions and more often than not, we're putting the ball in the net. And what we're griping about is a couple of missed opportunities instead of a game full of them.
So were there any other guys that stood out in this one or any other things that like was the Pascal substitution? You know, he unfortunately had the bad luck of having that last foul right before, you know, that the free kick that set up the drawing goal. Was there anybody else that stood out a little bit to you in this one?
I was admittedly not real excited when Stenzel came on. I'm not the biggest believer in Pascal as a defensive force. He's a good ball mover, but not necessarily a good attacker stopper. As far as people who had good games, Undav had a classic Undav game. The guy's a bulldog out there, just forces the defense into really uncomfortable positions and was doing that a lot, created a lot of space for the chances that Jirasi did get. Wu Yongjong, when he came on, played really well.
Oh, that's good.
Which was nice to see. We haven't seen much of him this year. Furich reinforced the idea that he needs to be on the field all the time, no matter what. Which is awesome as that is to see him developing like that. It's also a little concerning that we are reliant on him being on the field all the time, no matter what.
Yeah, we definitely noticed that last week in the Bremen match. So it's good to see that he's back. It's also, like you said, worrisome to wonder what's going to happen if he doesn't come back next year.
Yeah, we could definitely use some reinforcement at that wing if we're going to be playing European football, just so we're not completely burying him in minutes and wearing him out as the season goes on. The other guy I mentioned briefly earlier, Sturgio, I was a little concerned because we haven't seen a whole lot of him. He comported himself very well. No concerns about him being out on the defense. So this this game made me feel better about our defensive depth than I have probably in quite some time.
He seems like he's really making it a difficult decision for the club to buy out his loan option, because at some point we were just like, this guy, we don't need to keep him. But now you're kind of like, well, you know, we've got a lot of injuries on the defensive line, and he's really stepped up. And I agree with you. I thought he's looked pretty good the last couple of matches he's been in there.
Yeah, as long if his buyout's not too expensive, he'd be a smart guy to bring in, because he knows the system. He's comfortable playing with the players we have. He's shown himself to be capable. And then we've got reinforcements for a potential European campaign.
Yeah, I think it's like 2-3 million. The question becomes numbers, because I think Jamie's is around 5 to 6 million. Then, of course, you got Dennis. It's close to, I think, 15 to 20. So it's going to be interesting to see. I like two segues there that you had. One was talking about playing in Europe, and you talked about how well Dennis played. So let's get into our final thoughts and reality. So we've got 17, 21 points in the 3 months leading up to April. Now we've got 7 out of 12 points possible in April. But in the table in this one is this. We are in third place with 64. Leipzig is fourth place with 62 points, and Dortmund is at 57 with 3 to play. The bummer here, and this is what I agree with Dennis, he was interviewed by Archie after the match, and it was awesome. He was just very upfront about how the referee didn't play very well. I think Honus said it too. He's like, all the players had a great match. Everybody had a great match. Unfortunately, they were the only ones on the field who had a great match. The referee did not. So they were very blunt about this. The bummer that he mentioned, because Archie's like, hey, if you guys win 3 points next week against Bayern, you pretty much got Champions League wrapped up. And he's like, yeah, well, these were the 3 points that we could have got today. Is had we gotten the 3 points today, that would have been wrapped up a little bit. So the bummer is we still have 3 matches to play. We are up 7 points on Dortmund for at least that fourth spot. So things are looking good there. What's the schedule look like? So Dortmund has PSG this week, then they've got Augsburg next weekend, PSG again for the Champions League, then Mainz and Darmstadt. So their end of the season looks pretty easy peasy. Although Mainz, is in the relegation fight, so you never know. Leipzig has got Hoffenheim, Bremen, and then Frankfurt. So theirs doesn't look bad. We've got Bayern, then we're at Augsburg, which is always tough. And then we've got Gladbach, which who knows what's going to show up with that team. So it's going to be an interesting situation the next, 3 weeks here or so to see if we can nail that down. I mean, fourth is all that matters. So is a glass, Matt, half full, half empty at this point? 3 to go.
It's definitely half full. And especially looking at, let's dream a little bit here for a minute. If we beat Bayern this coming weekend, and then if they drop one of their 2 games against Wolfsburg, Hoffenheim, and Matarazzo has shown he knows how to play against Bayern.
Yep.
It'll be the end of the season. They'll have nothing left to really play for. We could move into second.
That would be awesome. Which would be
pretty darn exciting. So the glass is definitely half full. I mean, even if it winds up where we don't get European football, which I don't think seems likely at this point, it's still been an amazing season. Right. And it's been fun to even dream about playing European football. Now, if we don't make it this year, and then next year we're having a similar campaign and we wind up just short, that'll be a little bit heartbreaking.
Yeah. The nice thing is they've mathematically qualified for Europa League. If everything falls apart, the coefficient doesn't work, Dortmund, Leipzig win out, and we qualified for Europa League. But at this point, we're all from you and me to the players, or Europa League would be a failure at this point. So hopefully we can get those extra points there. I love what Alex said after the match. So the guys got together in a circle after the match. You usually only see that after a loss, right? And he said, quote, "We made the circle out of emotion. We have a great team spirit and we have to stick with ourselves. It was another great game from us. It's fun playing with these guys. And I hope that we stay together like this next season," end quote. So they're in this, we've talked about it before, this amazing bubble of positivity. And the fact that we can whine and moan about dropping points against the best team in probably all of Europe, when a year ago we were dropping points against Hertha Berlin. What a crazy year this has been. And like you said, no matter what happens for the next 3 games, this has been a dream season. Still want that dream to keep going though.
Yeah, and since you did mention reality, from a realistic perspective, Champions League is a much better outcome for us than Europa League because the money is a lot more significant, and we're going to need to spend to reinforce the squad, and we don't want to have a situation happen to us like happened to Union Berlin, where they didn't reinforce the right way,
right,
and they end up in the tank. In a relegation battle. So, like, let's not do that. But being in the Champions League versus being in Europa League would give us a lot more resources to make the moves the team needs to make to have some level of success on both fronts.
That is a fantastic segue to part three, some news and some cues. All right, so here we go. You mentioned Champions League versus Europa League. So we looked this up, and the money is, it's ridiculously different. So just to qualify the Champions League, it's about 19 million euro versus 4 million euro for the Europa League. You get about 2 million for a win. So there's 8 matches that you would get in the Champions League at minimum. And you get about half a million for a win in the Europa League. And then depending on how you finish, you can get anywhere from 3 to 9 million if you make it to the qualifying knockout round versus about a quarter million to a half million if you do that in the Europa League. I mean, the money is just, it's insanely different. And this is a team that doesn't have a lot of money. And this is a team that's going to make, are going to be forced to make some really tough decisions, whether they're going to be able to keep, not that they don't want to keep Seyrou or they don't want to keep Dennis, like which one of those guys can they afford to keep, how that money is going to be distributed with the club and all that stuff. So you mentioned the money. There's the facts right there. Yeah.
Well, let's hope that some of the stuff that's happening this summer with the Euros happening, and we know MHP Arena is going to be one of the host sites. Mm-hmm. I don't know how that money trickles from one side of the org over to the other, but maybe that'll get us some more funding. Maybe Porsche and Winamax and Mercedes will all see this additional exposure as reason to put a little more money into the club. Maybe the board will see it as a reason to loosen the purse strings a little bit. And, you know, we don't want them to go nuts. Like, let's still be smart about this, but spend some money, especially on guys like Gerasi and Undav, who we really need to, and Furish, who we need to have in the squad in order to be successful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we've got some of those guys that we're talking about for the squad for next year. Kicker had an article about the guys we have on loan, and almost none of them are having great seasons. And so from Omar to Gil to Wahid to Maglika, who was sold to Darmstadt, to Luca, to Juan, to Tomas Castaneros, who's actually doing pretty well. So hopefully he'll stick with and get another year of experience with them. Jovan Milosevic is probably the one guy who's having some success, but he's been hurt. And then you got a guy who is rumored to be going because he's not super happy with his playing time in Sivas. I mean, those are a lot of names of guys that are taking up a lot of payroll that aren't really doing much now and don't look like they're doing much for the future. So are there any of those guys, Sivas included, you think is going to play a role in what happens next year?
The only one from the players out on loan right now that interests me at all is Milosevic, and it's just from a, like, he's a mystery box right now. We don't know what's there because he's been injured. So if he could come in and contribute, then interesting. Kind of hate to say that I wouldn't be real sad to see Silas leave, but I wouldn't be real sad to see him leave. Love the guy. If he does leave, I hope he goes somewhere where he's going to be a good fit tactically and roster wise and can get lots of time. But his best utilization for us right now is a late game sub to burn up and down the field and cause tired defenses havoc. And it seems like that's not something he's happy doing.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think you shake his hand and say, let's see what we can do for you.
Yeah, I'm hoping I think he does have a role on this team, especially next year with those extra 8 matches that we're going to be playing. So I think.
I'm not advocating to get rid of him. And I think he can have a role, but his role is going to be primarily like late game sub. Right. You're going to come on at the 60th minute with some spot starts here and there to give guys a break. And if he's okay with that, then awesome. He's a great player to have to do that. And I think he can fill that role admirably. If he's not okay with that, you don't want a disgruntled guy who's going to be crabby in the clubhouse when everybody else is pumped up about the success that's going on.
Right, right. What else we got here? That's pretty much it for news. So we got some questions. Flabby Viking asks, oh my, which torture scene from a movie would you wish to befall Felix Verrier? Well, none. Flabby, that's just not the way we roll around here. But I do think it's a nice segue to ask a different question about, you know, what is your favorite horror movie, Matt?
Oh, I am not big on horror movies. So I had a friend who I worked with years ago who pressured me endlessly to see the Saw movies. And so I've seen four of the Saw movies, and there's something. I don't know if Ex Machina qualifies as a horror. I would think of that as kind of like a psychological thriller kind of horror, but that's a movie I think about semi-regularly. I don't know. What's your favorite horror movie?
You know, it's funny. We were just watching the old Willy Wonka Chocolate Factory.
Mm-hmm.
Watching it as an adult, you're like, this is really dark. So I don't think that's a classic answer, but I would probably say that's right up there right now. When I was a boy in my 20s, it's now a series, not a series, number of movies, Scream, were filmed relatively outside of my house. And a guy I went to high school with had a cameo in one of those. So I always I thought the Scream movies were pretty funny, first couple, three of them. So I'd go with that or the children's classic Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. So
the thing with the Willy Wonka movie that I think makes it sort of dark and creepy is Gene Wilder is so good in that.
Uh-huh.
You believe he would sit and watch those kids die just to see what would happen. Because he's just curious. It's not malicious. He's just like, oh, this is interesting. And that's weird and dark.
I actually read something that the guy who wrote the screenplay for that, they didn't know what the ending of the movie was going to be. And he made it up on the spot to make it much lighter than what it was. Because initially, you don't know what happens to those kids in the movie. So, and on the spot, he's like, yeah, let's turn the darkness here a little bit. So, I don't know. Maybe we're diving into that a little bit too much. Blue T has asked, does this game feel like we lost 2 points or won 1 point away from home? You know what? I'm going to go with the loss on this. I don't, for reasons maybe outside our control, maybe like you mentioned, we gave up that goal way too easily, but I really felt this was a lost 2 points, which I think goes to where this team is at right now, to where we can go on the road and get a draw against the best team in the world. And we're like, God, what's wrong with us? So I'm looking at it as a positive in a way. What about you?
I'm 100% with you. And I think if this was a game where we had been down 2-0 and had come back to tie it, we'd feel like we stole a point.
Good point.
If this had been a situation where they had scored maybe with 10 minutes left and then we kept it to a draw, we'd feel less bad. But the fact that a 17 handball deflection goal ended up going in the 7th minute of 5 minute added time just really makes this one kind of sting.
Yeah, that was rough. And then this gets into some rapid fire questions from Ballham. Thanks for sending these in. Do you think Bayer Leverkusen will go unbeaten? I do. They got 3 games left. I don't exactly know what their schedule is, but these guys, there's just something in the water, which is probably a bad thing to say because it's like a corporation that makes all kinds of stuff. I just don't see, unless they get bored, I don't know, man. These guys are on a mission, and that mission is almost completed.
They have Frankfurt, Bochum, and Augsburg left in the Bundesliga. I don't know what their Champions League schedule looks like, but that should be an easy run for them. So I'm with you, unless they get bored and just completely lose focus, which I don't think Xabi Alonso will let them do. He seems to have them all bought in on this being the greatest team ever in the Bundesliga rhetoric, and good for him. I do the same in his position. I don't think they're going to lose.
Yeah. Another question here. Do you think that Leipzig winning this last weekend against Dortmund should be that for the top four? I don't. I mean, there's still 7 games left. Dortmund's schedule isn't tough. The thing you've mentioned it before. Dortmund plays one way in the Champions League and plays another way in the Bundesliga. So I could see them dropping points, but I don't know. I think until we've officially wrapped this up, I don't think we've officially wrapped up anything. I'm not comfortable at all.
Yeah, I'm with you. I do, if I had to put pen to paper, I'd say the top four stays as they are right now. Dortmund's 5 points behind Leipzig. And I just can't see Leipzig dropping enough points for Dortmund to catch them. But, you know, who knows which version of Dortmund shows up and whether or not Leipzig is going to stub their toe real bad on a couple matches here.
I do love our chances in that last game against Gladbach, though. I just think at home, everybody's going to be fired up. Gladbach's got nothing to play for at this point. So I can see us getting points there to seal the deal. How much money have you guys spent this season at the Valpe shop? I have spent none, which blows my mind away, my family's mind away. My wallet is happier about that. Because we went with Winamax, though, I will admit that I felt very comfortable buying some knockoff eBay Chinese jerseys because I didn't feel the moral dilemma that I usually feel about doing that. So I did get about $70 worth of various, you know, knockoffs things. The only one that I'm really disappointed with is, Matt, you can kind of see it, is the special cabbage kit. They messed up the back and it was, I got a Zagadou one. And so you can clearly see it's a knockoff. But I haven't got anything. What about you?
Same. I am so disgruntled about the fact that they won't restock the black polo shirts so that there's a size that will fit me. That I haven't pulled the trigger, and just, I don't know, nothing that I've seen some stuff in the shop and I'm like, oh, that's nice. But it's either that's nice and it's too expensive, or it's like, that's nice, but I don't care enough to pay $40 to get it shipped from Stuttgart to Michigan.
The white and black warm-up kit, I would really like one of those, though. That's about 45 euro, I think. That thing's really sharp. So I really like that. And you can get it with Bad Cannstatt or with, I think, Stuttgart, or just leaving it blank. So that would, I would probably drop some money for that one there. The money. So there's no money involved in this, but we put out there that we have created a bracket for the player of significance. So, Matt, I forgot to tell you about this. So I'm springing this on you here. So it's not the player of the season. It's the player of significance, which I think might make it a little less predictable than maybe what all of us think this will end. So what we did is we took every player who has played, suited up, or been on the bench for Stuttgart this year. So we had a bracket of about 28 total guys. So the results came in, and there weren't many surprises. So as I pull these up real quick over here, and I look at that. All right, so we had not a lot of surprises. Like I said, the closest one, Silas versus Sterigio. Who did you vote for in that one?
I think it was Silas on that one.
Yeah, I voted for Leo in this one, and Silas pulled it out 60 to 40% in that one. Alex Neubel won 100% over Genki Gariguchi. Sorry about that, buddy. Valdi beat out Samuel Di Benedetto 100%. Florian Schott got one vote against Maxi Mittelstadt, but 95% of the people voted for Maxi there. Wu Yang lost out to Daxo, so Daxo made it past him. We had Pascal Stenzel versus Jamie Leveling. This was the other close one. Who'd you pick in this one?
I think I went with Leveling just because Daxo has been hurt.
Yep, Jamie Leveling won this one 70% to 30%. Joshua versus Mahoud. I thought this one would be a little bit closer. Who do you think won this one?
Joshua, based solely on the fact that Dahoud had a really bad game last week. A
lot of recency bias. It was 90% to 10% for Joshua. Anthony Rouault beat out Lilian Egloff. He was eternally injured. Let's see. Chris got 100% of the vote over Dennis, the future goalie, hopefully. Hiroki beat out Henri Chase, who unfortunately hasn't gotten in a game. Enzo, 100% over Luke. Otta, 100% over Roberto Massimo, who I forgot was on the team. So here's what we got going into next week. So Leo is going to go up. I'm sorry, Silas is going to go up against Seiru. Valdi and Alex Neubel are going to go up against each other. I think that's going to be an interesting one. Maxi and Daxo are going to go. I think I know which way that will go. It's going to go Angelo Stiller versus Jamie Leveling. We'll have Fabian Bredlow, who because of the kicker ratings, he got a first round bye. So everybody out there, shut up. That's just the way that we did it. He's going to go against Josh.
I'd like to have an extensive conversation about your choices in this.
First round, he had the third best rating. So suck it, everybody else. Anthony Ruo is going to go against Chris Furyk. Hiroki is going to go against Enzo. Ada is going to go against Dennis. So I really think the Alex Nubel versus Valdi Anton one is going to be tight.
That's going to be the one I'm going to have to think the most about. Mm-hmm. That's, I think you've got to ask yourself, like, player of significance is the argument. So is Anton that much better, like more, I'm really stretching the English language here. Is Anton more better than next replacement than Nubel is better than Breadlow?
Mm-hmm.
There's your significance. If one of those guys goes away, how do we feel about things? Like, Breadlow showed that he was pretty good last year and that mm-hmm. he can be counted on. He's not going to win any games for you, but he's probably not going to lose it for you either. Do we have the same confidence in Anton's backups?
Thank you for finally coming around and appreciating his first round bye, Fabian Breadlow. Let's look into the next match. All right, we got part four. Stuttgart is hosting Bayern. Doesn't get any easier for us. The good news is they're going to play Real Madrid on Tuesday before they play us, so maybe they'll be a little tired. Last time we played these guys, it was a 3-0 loss on the road, but it was way worse than the score. Alex had a mistake the first 2 minutes, and it was all downhill from there, and it was just, we were lucky the score was only 3-0. It was, now though, it's 2-3. Who would have thought that? They're a bit of a dumpster fire by their standards. Tuchel is gone at the end of the year. They've played bleh in the Bundesliga by their standards, but they played really well in the Champions League. We have them to thank because they beat Arsenal, so that helped the coefficient a little bit. But they have won 4 of their last 5 matches with a tie thrown in there. So they have rallied, you know, a bit. The last time we scored a goal against them, it was old friend Juan Perea got the goal, so that's cool for him. When I say Bayern Munich, what is it, you know, goes through your mind? We've only beaten these guys once in the last 25 tries, so that's a little intimidating.
Yeah, but that one time was a 5-0 beatdown in Munich on the day when they were celebrating the Meisterschale, so suck it, Bayern. Mm-hmm. I am, as an American fan of a Bundesliga team that is not Bayern Munich, I am so sick of Bayern Munich. And anybody that I talk to, that I tell them that I follow the Bundesliga, they're immediately like, my company has offices, we have 5 offices in Germany. I talk to anybody from any of those offices who I haven't had conversations with, and I ask them if they follow the Bundesliga, they go, oh, you're probably a Bayern Munich fan. It's like, no. And I'm sick of the American media just focusing on it's Bayern and a bunch of other teams. Mm-hmm. It's been the best thing about Leverkusen being as good as they are this year is that it's flipped that narrative on its head, and it's forcing outside organizations who don't normally pay a lot of attention to the Bundesliga to look at the fact that Leverkusen's great. Bayern's still doing really well. Stuttgart is amazing. Mm-hmm. Dortmund's doing fantastic. Leipzig's doing well. And these guys are all having success in Champions League too, which, you know, we're pounding the English teams. So that's awesome. I don't know. I'm all wound up. I don't like Bayern. I'm sick of my phone giving me notifications that Bayern is chasing after a Stuttgart player.
I know.
it's irritating, and I hope we throttle them. And I think we can, because I think they made a huge tactical error in firing Tuchel in the midpoint of the season and then going, but we're going to keep him on because, I don't know, we don't have any other ideas at this point. Mm-hmm. Feels like they've gotten their ship righted a little bit, but it also feels like Bayern is a team that can just out-talent you. They don't have to out-tactic you. They don't have to outwork you. They have Harry Kane's one of the best strikers in the world. And they can just throw the ball near him and he's probably going to put it in the net. So what does that look like when they come up against a team in Stuttgart that's really hungry, that's really well organized, that plays really well together. I like our chances against a slightly disengaged, slightly chaotic, super talented team that's just been bullying a bunch of guys that can't keep up with them.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see how they play in this one, because it seems like they're playing for each other in the Champions League. And now that they know that the Bundesliga is out of reach, they're just kind of there. You know, they're just kind of going through. But like you said, they've got so much talent, they can get away with it. And Stuttgart plays the way they want to play, right? Open, back and forth and stuff like that. So it'll be interesting to see how we do in this one. I'm scared of their jersey. It's just, we played them 25 times. We've only won once in those last 25 times, I should say. So it's going to be really tough for me to take Stuttgart in this one. What do you think the odds makers, speaking of Winamax, have this one at? It is at Stuttgart. Remember, Bayern is playing on Tuesday, though.
Well, whenever we play against a team that is just playing European football, it seems to make them stronger.
I know. And
more tired, which is super frustrating. So I'm going to think out loud at you for a second. Bayern's got 69 points to our 64. They've got a plus 51 goal differential to our plus 32. They're coming to our house. They're on a three-game heater. We drew, lost, and won in our last three. I'm going to say it's a pick 'em.
Stuttgart is favored by half a goal in this one.
So they just went with the standard, give the home team half a goal.
I guess, but Hoffenheim is getting a full goal. They're the underdogs at home against Leipzig. We're half a goal favorites in this one. I've never actually seen us be favorites against, well, I've never seen us be favorites against Bayern Munich. So I don't know. I'm, everybody knows me. I'm Mr. Pessimistic on some of this stuff. I struggled. I don't know. Our pod predictions, I have to go against what Jeff is picking because he has the lead. So if he picks Bayern, I'll take Stuttgart in this one. But for the purposes of this, the best I can hope is for a draw, I think. And because of that, I'm probably going to take Bayern plus the goal or the half the goal in this one. I 100% agree with what you're saying. It's at our house. We're playing great. They're probably disengaged. If I'm them, I want to save myself for the next Real Madrid game, right? Who cares how we do in Stuttgart?
I can see us pumping two or three past them and then going into lockdown mode and Bayern just getting frustrated and kind of doing some finger pointing stuff. You're not doing as much as you need to so that I can score my goal.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of things. I think this is our game to lose. That said, if Bayern comes out and starts in fifth gear, we might get curb stomped. But we just showed what we can do against a world class football club in Leverkusen.
Right.
As long as we come in with the same intensity, and maybe we'll cash in a few of those chances that we put just wide of the net and put four or five up on them. It's anything's possible.
To your point, this team has shown a nice resiliency to bounce back from subpar performances or subpar halves. So hopefully they do that again in this one. It'd be awesome to get that Bayern monkey off our back, so to speak, and get a W here and wrap up at home what could be, the final points we need to get that extra 19 million euro for next year and say, hey, Seiru, Alex Nubel's right. Why don't you stick around a bit?
We're having fun, right? Let's keep having fun. Fun. You like fun, right? Nobody doesn't like fun.
I could go for some fun. Well, Matt, it was fun having you back on here. Any last words of wisdom before we wrap up episode 120?
So I got two things. First, I want to, well, three, I guess. First, I want to criticize you for doing a solo episode because I've been wanting to secretly try and catch up to you. And that threw a serious wrench in my plans. Then I want to compliment you on powering through a solo episode with nobody to bounce stuff off of and no opportunities to kind of catch your breath for a minute. The struggle with that is real. And I think you did a fantastic job.
Well, thank you.
And third, I'm not going to sit on that compliment for too long because I can see it's making you uncomfortable.
Stop blushing.
I want to point out that Leverkusen's mascot is a giant teddy bear. And he was wearing a shirt that looks like the Black Dare shirts from the 1990s. I found that hilarious. And this will only mean something to Americans of a certain age, but I don't care. I saw it and I pointed at the TV and I said, the Bears wearing a Dare shirt. And both of my children looked at me very confused.
Back when public service announcements and Nancy Reagan was telling us, just say no. Well, that makes sense, though, because most of the German clubs tend to play music from the 80s anyway. So maybe Dare has just made its way over. Don't do drugs, kids. Listen to Nancy. She knows what she's talking about. Could be. So,
yeah, I thought it was hilarious. And I also think it's hilarious that Derek Ray keeps telling everybody to settle in with Major Tom, that it's going to be all over the Euros. And personally, I love that song. I think the German version is way better than the American version. I don't know. It's a song that I used to help me learn vocab and learn pronunciation when I was early on in my language learning journey. So I don't know. I think it's cool. I think it's a great jam. I'm excited to hear it over and over and over again during the Euros. And I think it's really kind of funny that Derek Ray keeps telling people to make peace with it, that that's going to be the anthem of the Euros this summer.
Yeah, I'll have to listen to that, because if you don't know what Matt's talking about, is that this Major Tom song is somehow caught fire in Germany and has become like the official, I should say unofficial song for the German team, because they tried to make it the official song and they said, nope, too late. We already, it was sort of like they had already sent in their cassette tape to the Euros, so they couldn't reset. It was really like Columbia House, you know. Oh, that's another blast from the past reference if you don't know what we're talking about here. The other thing I will say to counter your compliment, the 20-minute fast episode that I did solo is one of our lowest listened to episodes in at least a solid 50-60 episodes. So your compliment might be one of the only ones for that one.
I'm going to attribute that more to the loss and people just being mad than any criticism of a solo shot.
That's probably obviously what it was. Me and me alone doing that. All right. Well, Matt, thanks so much for popping on back after your month-long just journey. Hopefully, maybe in an episode or two, you can tell us about your hooligan days, you know, overseas when you were at a couple matches. And maybe you can raise the respect or intimidation level of this program.
Yeah, maybe if, depending on how things go, maybe we'll have story time about my trip to see Millwall at the Den, in a rundown corner of London, play their hated rivals Cardiff City FC. It was quite an experience.
And to one up you, I will tell my South Korean somebody threw chopsticks story at me. So
looking forward to it.
There you go. All right, everybody, thanks so much for listening to this episode. Matt, thanks for popping back on, and hopefully we talk to you next week after a big win against Bayern Munich. Thanks a lot, everybody.
Most of the Stuttgart fans are going to be tucking into the Mauertaschen with glee tonight. If you're wondering what a Mauertasche is, it's a culinary speciality of this region. Southwestern German dumpling. And if you're not a fan of Mauertaschen, then always look for Spätzle, which is the southwestern German variety of pasta. I must confess to being a bit more of a Spätzle man myself. But do give the Mauertasche a try if you come here.